Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything. Data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OHIOFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OHIOFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1-1-23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
Some cars are comfy on the inside, but don't have power on the outside. And some cars have the horsepower, but none of the comfort. I used to think there weren't any cars that were the total package. But that all changed when I got my Honda SUV. It's rugged and sophisticated. And right now, Honda has deals on the entire Honda SUV lineup. CR-V, HR-V, Pilot, Passport, you name it. So if you're looking for a car that's the total package, the only place you'll find it is at your local Honda dealer. Hurry before they're all gone.
All right, here we go. It's episode 3 of Film Study with Ken McCusick for this week. As we look back at week 3, the Broncos game, another rainy game where the Ravens pulled away 27-14 for another victory. Ken McCusick, how you doing?
Life's good, Josh. How about you?
I am doing really well. I'm doing great. You know, we're getting a lot of praise lately on Twitter for this podcast, and that's wonderful. I want people to keep that up. I want people to keep spreading the word. I do have one request, and we normally get to this at the end of the show, but I wanted to bring it early in case people have been missing it at the end. Along with it, you can continue to praise on Twitter. That's wonderful. We love that. If you could take a little bit of that and go write a review on iTunes, that would really help the show grow as well.
Yes, that's it. So they see that. What does it happen? The search engine or the iTunes search engine for the podcast will bring up some of the reviews?
It'll bring up the reviews, and it'll help us rank higher as like one of the best Ravens podcasts.
Which I would think we are.
Yes, and we're really easy to find. If you type in film study, you would think you'd get some other like movie stuff or whatever, Hollywood podcast. You don't. You get us as the number one podcast for film study. So
search, that's a good thing.
Yeah, so search film study. You'll find us and put some of those compliments in there so it'll help out your fellow Raven fans when they are looking for podcasts. Everything on Twitter helps too, so continue that as well.
Anyway, thanks guys for listening. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. If I was better prepared, I'd have some of that stuff to read, but then we would just be kind of praising ourselves as well. So I'll leave that for now, maybe another week. Ken, a big week coming up this week with the Steelers. We just finished the Steelers preview, but let's look back one more episode at the offense because we didn't really get into the offense yet from the 27-14 victory in home in the rain again. It was pretty much a mirror of opening weekend outside of the Broncos actually played a little defense.
Sure, there was. It was a lot of significant similarities that the pass rush really got shut down in both games, and the Ravens did a good job of throwing the ball, getting quick releases. Flacco appears to be a fairly rain-resistant quarterback. That's a great thing. I think if you look at this game in terms of what drove the passing game this week, though, I think there are four contributing factors, and it's difficult for me to pick which one was better than the next. So we're going to kind of touch on all those in a kind of all a right. theme show this week.
Great, because what we heard last week, and as we did all the prep for, we didn't have a preview episode for week three, but as we did research, everyone kept talking about how Denver has a great pass rush, and of course there's Von Miller, who has his own credits.
Yeah, he's on his own moon right now with four sacks in the first two games. I love two-game predictions, but they're already projecting him for 32 sacks, which would have broken the NFL record by nine and whatnot. So that didn't quite work out, of course. Now he's only got, what would it be, only 1.33 sacks per game. So he's only on pace for about 21 sacks. Going to fall short of the record currently.
Right, right. He did not perform as well against the Ravens. But again, the Ravens continued to move the ball. Joe continued to hit different wide receivers and spread the ball out. And again, Joe looked good in the rain.
Yeah, he sure did. So a whole bunch of things Joe Flacco did well. Let's talk about him to start with, because I think it starts with what Joe does with his opportunity set, as we often talk about. And that's the frequency with which he gets ample time and space is how I define that.
Right.
So there were 41 dropbacks in this game. And that excludes one spike. So if you're looking and you see, oh, there's 40 passes and there's two sacks, it should be 42. What's he doing? It's we take out the spike. So 19 of those 41, he had ample time and space. And that is right around where you'd expect for 41 dropbacks. It's not materially different from 50% to be bothering about it. What was good about it is that Flacco was almost equivalent with and without ATS. So with ATS, he was at 6.8 yards per throw, which is actually a little bit below average. But without ATS, he was at 6.2 yards per throw, which is 2 yards above average. So that was really good. Didn't throw an interception in either condition. Obviously, he had one touchdown pass, only took two sacks, which was a good day by him and the line in terms of getting rid of the ball and not taking sacks. I think what happened a lot in terms of something offensive line scoring, Joe really helped his guys out by a quick delivery, and that helped slow down the Broncos in terms of effective four-man pass rush. It's hard to do that against a quick delivering quarterback because it takes time to win one-on-one matchups. And when you only rush four, what you're really trying to do is allow your secondary to weigh on those receivers, allow Flacco to feel that trash compactor slowly compressing around him and then make an unforced error. Well, that didn't happen. Joe got rid of the ball quickly. He generally had windows to throw into. And even when they were small, like I can remember one slant to Willie Snead, he was right on target with the football and did a fine job. So second straight really good game in the rain. He ended up being about, 19 yards better than his expectation in total. So that's a good game anytime, but it's a really good game in the rain where you'd expect to lose some yards to drops and lose some yards to other conditional factors, ball slipping out of your hand or whatnot that you wouldn't get in other games.
Right. And so do you think the Ravens went into this knowing, all right, we hear about Denver's pass rush, we know Von Miller's there, we got to get the ball out quick?
Yeah, I think pretty much everything about their passing game really focused on how they're going to stop all four, really, of the Denver edge rushers. And they have so many good ones, they rush them from the inside as well, kind of like the Ravens in that regard. Theirs are just, I think, frankly, a step up from ours. They have Bradley Chubb, who's a rookie, who plays Suggs' normal position at the rush linebacker. And they have Von Miller on the other side. And they're using other guys like Shane Ray on the inside. He sometimes rushes from the outside as well. And Shaq Barrett, who is their fourth really high-end rusher. So that's a very good group of guys you can rotate in and constantly have some fear in the quarterback's eyes when he takes that snap. But Flacco handled it very well on Sunday. And I do think it was all the game plan really related around how were they going to stop those guys from getting to Joe.
All right. So the plan for Joe was to release it quick. What other type of scheming went in with the offensive line in order to handle Von Miller and the guys?
Okay, well, that's a good question because there were some special things. I really want to talk about one in particular. But they played some unbalanced line. And the reason you might do that is because you have a weakness at right tackle in James Hurst, who's probably your weakest pass blocker for his position. And you want to get him help or get him off of pass blocking for some plays as you can. Also show a different look that you might be taking as a run look to Denver that then you can throw out of as well. But what they would do is they would play unbalanced and they would tuck James Hurst in on the inside. So when they played unbalanced left, Hurst moved in over to the left side, but he played the second lineman in. So Stanley's all the way on the far left, then Hurst, then Lewis. When they moved to the right side, just simply moved Stanley to the outside of that formation, outside of Hurst. So Hurst was always the tucked tackle in those cases. And they did a good job with those plays. The really entertaining play had Alex Lewis lining up as a faux-eligible receiver. So I really want you guys to go back and look at this play. It's in the fourth quarter, 8:35 remaining. Take a look at it, because Alex Lewis lined up at the line of scrimmage. He did not report eligible. If he had, it actually would have been a penalty, I think. But he lined up on the inside of the formation. So he lined up, on the outside, but not as the end receiver. And according to football rules, you have seven guys who must line up on the line of scrimmage. You can never be less than that. You can have more than that, but then you make more of your players ineligible. If you line up with exactly seven on the line of scrimmage, as you should, then only your two edge guys are eligible receivers. And in the formation they had, Nick Boyle was in a traditional three down right tackle stance. So he's in the tradition, the stance that Hurst would normally be in. We had Lewis way out on the left side, who's 15 yards off of the left tackle Stanley, but standing there upright. And Andrews was to his left, also at the line of scrimmage, standing upright. And the Denver secondary got a little bit confused, and they got over there, and there were three guys on that side, including John Brown in the slot. And one of the Denver secondary guys says, wait a minute, come on over. Somebody's got to cover this guy here. And Von Miller is the guy who walked out to cover Alex Lewis standing there. Now, Alex Lewis was not an eligible receiver. So basically, right, that's a big favor. They're doing him. Now, there are some things they could do under those situations. I wouldn't put it past Morningweg to create a trick play out of that situation, because while Lewis is ineligible to receive a forward pass, he is eligible, as all players on the field are, to receive a lateral or backward pass. And from there, after receiving such a pass, he can also throw a forward pass himself under the rules of football. So he has there were options to use him, but basically all Lewis did was stand right at the line of scrimmage and put his hands up immediately as soon as the play got started, looking back to Flacco, begging for the football. And Von Miller was buying it the whole way. He did not attempt to rush the quarterback. And if you think about it, that's as if you had Alex Lewis block Von Miller one-on-one. And that'd be a great,
That's great.
You take that anytime.
Yeah.
So,
but that's also one where you got to make sure Joe knows, do not throw it here.
Yes. Well, the thing is, he has to know not to throw it there. But if Von Miller had rushed, I wonder if Lewis would have known, step back 5 yards, so at least you can accept the lateral there. And then there are options. He can throw the ball, or he can run the ball himself from that position. So it would have been a fun gimmicky play, up a couple touchdowns, to see what they could have done in that situation.
It would have been a scary play if you're lateraling the ball to Lewis and asking him to throw the ball.
Yeah, a little bit scary. He's only going to throw to a wide open receiver. Hopefully he doesn't pull Lamont Jordan from 2004 with the Jets and start a big comeback with an interception, thrown on an option pass. But yeah, it would have been a great trick play to have. And I think you can continue this trickery if you're willing to throw that pass and set it up on the outside, and you once try a pass or run play with that lineman by taking a lateral first. So I love the play. It's my favorite play from this weekend.
It does make you wonder, because it worked out great, but you got to question, what if Von Miller doesn't fall for that? He has a free ride to the quarterback.
Yeah, he would have had a free run, and Joe would have had to get rid of the football immediately, and that would have been not the ultimate. Not the optimal situation.
Right. Was there someone
blocking four on the inside?
Was there someone like short prepared for that, for a dump off?
There's always a hot read. Right. So there would have been someone. Collins was actually just floating out of the backfield to the right, and he actually caught the pass for a loss of three on the play, by the way, also. So right. It's not like it,
so
the
it didn't
play
really
was a big
work.
Success.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he would have been the hot read that Joe would have gone to, I think, if Von had rushed.
All right. Well, it's fun to see creativity. We've been talking about it a lot on the defensive side of the ball. It's fun that Marty has gotten in on the game, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I saw a little bit of this out of Marty at the end of last year. I thought he was really – some of the handcuffs were off. He was doing more in terms of creative moving around. In fact, in that Cincinnati game they lost, they had a great comeback in that game to take the lead. People forget that, and they only focus on the 4th and 12. But Marty Morningweg really did a lot of creative things to get that comeback rolling through, and it was an impressive comeback. I felt myself like I was almost back in 1975 again, my first year as a football fan, and really looking at Burt Jones and wondering, well, what's going to come next kind of thing, in terms of how the play calling was. So exciting, and certainly an exciting game against Denver this last Sunday in terms of variety of play calls.
Yeah, it's really fun when the Ravens have been kind of a stale team of what you're going to get, to have a season like this where Harbaugh's extremely on the hot seat, Flacco's extremely on the hot seat, and it's all working out. The coaches have gotten it together, even with Marty and how he's been mixing in Lamar. But Flacco has even been creative, because he's hitting all the wide receivers. He's spreading that ball around. So let's talk about the wide receivers.
Sure. I mean, a great game from the wide receivers here. They really only dropped one significant pass, and that was the pass to Brown down the left sideline, which somehow eluded his hands. It was about a 30-yard throw, first play of the second quarter. And I don't exactly know how he missed the ball, but apparently maybe didn't pick it up in the air or whatever, but it was effectively just about through his hands. Other than that, they caught everything that was thrown at them. Buck Allen dropped the ball near the line of scrimmage, but it was a no account play at the end of the second quarter where they were trying to stop the clock anyway. Otherwise, they caught everything that were thrown to them, and that's a big part of it. They did not have that in the first rainy game against Buffalo. They dropped several passes, including a couple by Crabtree, and there were other drops as well in that game.
Right.
But this game was a really good one. If you look at what the receivers are doing after the catch, that was very significant. Brown caught long balls, and Brown actually has the longest average target distance of any receiver in the NFL right now. It's over 19 yards. So that's where the ball is thrown to him. And then he's averaged, I don't recall exactly what per catch, but it's a good, it's in the 17, 18 yard range, because he's obviously caught more of the shorter ones.
Right.
But Mark Andrews twice found space in the middle of the field. Both times he made a play after the catch. One guy on Twitter made the point on Andrews' second catch in particular, that he made a relatively fearless catch in traffic. And it's one, if the receiver rules were a little bit different in terms of the ability to light that guy up, he might not have come away with the football or his head after that
right.
play.
Yeah, I know Hurst is practicing again now with the team, but I am loving Mark Andrews on the field. I like him a lot.
I don't think they'll reduce his playing time. There's several teams in the NFL right now, by the way, who need a tight end, and it is even possible that either Boyle or Williams, who are both fourth-year players, could be a reasonable trade alternative at this point. Williams is the guy that the Ravens would probably rather trade, but he's also the guy who has less value, so who knows where it'll be. But they have one too many tight end effectively right now, and they're going to have to kind of work that out in terms of who gets the playing time.
All right, yeah. I guess it's just exciting because you got Brown as the deep guy. You've got Andrews who's doing that crossing route, and you've got, doesn't Snead have the most catches on the team?
Yeah, Snead's up there, and I honestly don't have the stats right in front of me, but it's not okay. Important, I don't think.
No.
So, yeah, Snead has not the most tackles. Josh Allen, running, okay, he's got,
well, can't be right. I don't count the running back dumps off.
Yeah, he's fourth on the team in catches with 12, but it's 15, 13, 12, 12. So, all right, Crabtree, so, Allen, Brown, Snead. So it's very close.
All right, so it's what we've been seeing from Flacco, that every game he's hitting all the wide receivers.
Yes, and Snead is their slant guy. So he usually lines up in the slot, and just very effective. I think Flacco knows to trust where he'll be, which is the key thing. So get the right depth. Flacco is seeing a closing window on a slant because that's the way it usually happens, especially the ones that are in danger. Sometimes it's not in danger, and you have all space in front of the receiver, and you can lead him, and you got space to play with. Other times you have the pincer movement coming in where a linebacker is closing on that slant route and he's making that window a little smaller. And there, Flacco has good trust with Snead, and Snead, I think, has good spatial relationship skills to find that spot where he's going to be between the two defenders and has done a good job with that. So it's worked out. I think he's a good acquisition. Snead is going to be around for next year. John Right. Brown, of course, is not. I think we're going to get to that a little later in the show in terms of who the Ravens need to be concerned about in terms of free agents and looking forward to that.
Yeah, and I guess part of that is that all our wide receivers have their roles, and they're all good at different roles. You got Brown, who's got the speed for the deep guy, Snead on the slants, and Crabtree seems to be really good at getting separation on these comebacks.
Yeah, I think that's really a key. And separation on comebacks is a little different from separation downfield, but Crabtree has to sell two routes in order to come back and get the one.
Right.
And then he's very effective at using his body to shield out that defender. So, Flacco had tremendous trust with Mason early on in his career in terms of running that comeback route time after time after time, and he had the arm to throw the ball and still does outside the numbers. So it's nice to see that really come back to the Ravens' arsenal. And, sometimes it can be frustrating and a little bit short of the sticks, but especially when you run it on first or second down, it's usually a nice chunk of yardage towards the first down, and it plays well into their hands. And I did not realize how effective the Ravens had been, but they've made either all 9 or all 10 of their 3rd-and-1 conversions so far this year. So that's another thing that tells you picking up chunks of yardage and getting close for third down is really going to pay dividends for a team like this.
Right. And of course, Joe is also using the running backs with Collins, and especially Allen had a big catch this week.
Right. So Allen found a way to worm his way into the end zone, which was really good. He's been a low yards per touch guy, and it really hasn't been any different this year. 5.4 yards per reception. Not exactly what we're looking for. 2.0 yards per run, although a lot of those 16 runs have...
Those are goal line.
Yeah, exactly. He's had some goal line runs, so there's been a 1 yard touchdown is a fine carry. But even if you take those out, he still doesn't have a very good yards per carry average. But his play to get in the end zone was a real burner down the sideline. Again, Von Miller is the guy right there who couldn't either get him down or get him out, and he found a way to snake his way to the pylon right along that sideline. Was an impressive dive.
Right, right. All right, you love the offensive line play. So let's get it. Let's get to it. We break down the offensive line each game because the offensive line really is like the core of the offense. Even though they don't get all the credit, they're the core that makes the time for Flacco, that makes the holes for the running. They're the guys that get all this work done.
They're the games won in the trenches. So we'll start with Ronnie Stanley this week. So Ronnie, a heroic effort here, playing hurt. He had a brace on his arm, but he bled through the brace, so he ripped the brace off.
Yeah, half the game it broke. Yeah.
So I didn't know if it broke or if he bled onto the brace, but that's what I thought it was, that he bled onto the brace and he had to throw that away. That's even better, and it's always a story to come away from this. But He had a very good game that was, you know, really turned up to excellent by the fact that Flacco helped him out with a very quick release. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. He gave up four of his misses. So he had six missed blocks total in the game, but four were times when he was beaten as a pass blocker, but the ball was out quickly. So when that happens, he only gets charged with a missed block instead of a pressure or a quarterback hit or a sack. If the ball had been held longer, he could have been responsible for. So he avoided some significant negative charges from that aspect. Now, in terms of charges he actually did get, he got one pressure when he was bulled by Miller. That was late in Q1. On the game's second play, he got beat off the inside for what I took to be half the sack for Bradley Chubb. Now, Chubb beat his weak arm to the inside. That's a tough arm to play without. Let's start with that. But on the other side at that same time, Hurst was allowing a bull rush that really got in Flacco's face before then, and I charged equally the sack on that play. Oftentimes, it's the first invasion of the pocket that I really give the sack to, but in this case, I thought both of them deserved it. Stanley was beaten quickly to the inside and honestly deserved a portion of that shot. But nonetheless, Stanley scored very well in the game. 0.80 is a raw score, including an adjustment. He gets up to an A- for the game. So excellent game out of Ronnie. Could not have asked for more given the injury he's playing under. And he got a high ranking from PFF as their left tackle of the week.
All right. How about Lewis? We're going to get to Lewis in the mailbag where we're going to kind of look a little bit more at his year as a whole. But how did he do in just this one game?
Okay, well, I kind of want to try and answer the mailbag question right, as well while we're talking
then
about
let me, Then let me get to the mailbag now. Yeah. So this question came in from Steve on Facebook, and it's, why is Alex Lewis starting at left guard? PFF grades the Ravens offensive line as 31st, with Lewis being the weakest. Now, there was a lot of trash talking to Lewis that I removed from that question, but make sense of Lewis in this line.
Sure. Well, first of all, Alex Lewis at left guard was pretty good in 2016. Now, when I say pretty good, he was a C-plus player maybe in the games he was there, and he was much worse at tackle. So when they're trying to find a spot for Lewis, and he's a big guy, left guard makes sense. There were things I liked about him back then, and I still do, in terms of his ability to be decisive in level two. So versus teams that don't run a normal 4-3, as Denver does, they run a 3-4 instead, those guards get to level two more, and they have more opportunities to make blocks. Very few level two blocks in this game, by the way, because of the Broncos' front. So anyway, normally you get more out of Lewis in terms of level two blocks there. What we've gotten consistently from Lewis this year is consistent pull blocking. And since the Ravens rely heavily on their power run game in order to create opportunities to the outside where Collins really likes to run, those pulls are important, and he's made now 23 out of 27. So that's not the problem. That's not what Lewis is doing. In fact, that's what Lewis is doing the best in terms of his run blocking. He's had some difficulties in pass blocking. I will tell you, if you're looking at PFF, there's two reasons why they don't like Alex Lewis or why they grade him down, and I'll tell you why my system grades him differently. One is that anybody who gives ground in the run game and appears like they're losing is subject to half-point charges. And if they're not a road grader that's also generating half-point charges on the other side, then it's very likely that they're going to end up with a negative run block score that's magnified beyond what its actual value is in the game.
Okay.
So guys that can effectively hold a pick once set have real value in terms of the run game. They certainly have value in the pass game, and we can understand that. But guys who can maintain a block in the run game have value even if they're not moving somebody. So Alex Lewis does not have road grader ability to move anybody when he's directly opposite him. He has tremendous ability to move people when he's on the move with a pull. So he's done well in that regard. In terms of pass blocking, there's another reason why PFF is downgrading him, is that they don't properly attribute or ascribe partial pass rush events. So a very key example came up in this game is that Lewis allowed a looping outside pressure to Shane Ray, which eventually was converted into a sack. If you look at that play, and it's at the end of quarter two at 1:06 left in the second quarter, you'll see that what really happened on that play is Hurst got bowled back into the quarterback by Miller. And that's what initially compromised the pocket, same as the other sack, by the way. And caused Flacco to pull the ball down, move his legs, and start moving up in the pocket. And then about a second later, Ray caught him from behind after Lewis could no longer contain him, and he took him down. I gave him two-thirds of that sack. I think in retrospect, that's probably too high. He should have gotten half the sack. But the problem with Pro Football Focus is they can only give him a one or a zero on that sack. So they judged one, and that when you have players who are getting a lot of partial charges for pass rush events, they're going to tend to be overcharged or undercharged, one or the other, by PFF system. And in this case, with this sack, Lewis was significantly overcharged for that event by PFF. So if you're just looking at reasons why I think Lewis is better than PFF grades him, that's the reason. Those are two reasons why it can occur. So in this game, was the game good? No, it wasn't. It was 0.68 was his score, which isn't good at guard. I gave him a 0.04 adjustment, which still leaves him at a D. But Alex Lewis through three games is a C-minus player. He's not a jump off the edge of the world because this guy is so bad player. He's been compared to Gino Gradkowski. That's frankly ridiculous. You know, the Ravens have had a number of bad guards in recent years who've been in there for partial time. You can go to Ramon Harwood and the center they had from Dallas for a while was at guard, and Vlad Dukas and players like that, who are just nowhere near as good as what Lewis is on the average or on any kind of expected level. So I tell you, get off the ledge on Alex Lewis. Allow this to play out. I think he's going to be pretty good. He may not be the guy to move to center, especially now once we talk about Skur a little bit, but he may be a very serviceable left guard here for the Ravens, and that could be moving forward after this year as well.
All right. We talked a lot going into this about maybe this is the time to shift some stuff around on the offensive line. Doesn't really appear they did that, but that's because Skur has been okay, and then he had another good game this week.
Yeah, so he had a bad game last week and a good game this week. So it's basically been good, bad, good, the three games. Okay, so B plus, D, and A in this game. This game was one of his best ever as a Raven. And there's something that helped him in the game, but also he took extra responsibility that really needs to be reflected here accurately. So we talked a lot about how they're responding to Von Miller and what they have to do him. Well, the Broncos still want to rush with four, and Von Miller normally sets up on the right side. So what they try and do is the second inside guy, usually the defensive tackle on the side where Von Miller is, they try and initially double with Yanda and Skura when there's a four-man pass rush. When that happens, Yanda will try and pin that guy so Skura can handle him one-on-one, and then Yanda immediately flips over and tries to create a help block for Lewis as soon as he thinks that Skura has him handled. So Skura's taking on more of that one-on-one responsibility. Admittedly, after he's been helped to get the guy teed up from Yanda, but still, it's taking on a bigger man and trying to hold him off. He did a great job of that in this game and allowed Yanda, his solid holding of those players, allowed Yanda to make a lot of these good help blocks that actually greatly reduced the damage of the bulls that Hurst was allowing to Miller in this game. And it wasn't just Miller, it was Ray and others. So he had a lot of value in this game, and I thought that I didn't give him a higher subjective adjustment because I didn't need to anyway in this game, but he scored at 0.89 per play. He'd have had an A anyway, but this is a game if I could have justified a higher subjective adjustment for him as well. 1.5 pressures allowed in the game. One of those was a pass defense by Wolf that a lot of people don't even think should be charged, but he allowed Wolf to get his hands up and keep him up. So, you know, that he gets charged for that in my system. So anyway, if you're thinking, by signing Ronis Grassou that the Ravens are going to change centers or they're set to make a move right away, they're not. There is no immediate jeopardy to Matt Skura's job. You know, he's played well enough to hold that job, and I think it would take at least two bad games in a row right now for him to get swapped out.
All right. So Skura's doing well. Yanda, you mentioned, is doing a really good job, especially with those help blocks with Skura. How about Hurst? He was on Miller's side a lot, right?
Right. So Hurst is the right tackle. Miller is the left defensive end, or a left outside linebacker. And normally he comes in and he has to block Von Miller. So he did surrender some front side pressure from Miller on a couple occasions. What I liked about Hurst's blocking is that he largely was able to stay in front of Miller and just allow Miller the bull rush. Now, it's not like Miller isn't effective at the bull rush, but Miller is tremendously quick. So he also has the ability to get right around, you know, typical right tackles and make a move on the quarterback and the football, as he would say. That didn't happen very much in this game. Mostly he just took the bull rush to James Hurst, and that allowed, you know, these secondary help blocks from Marshall Yanda to knock him off and reduce his impact on the play. You know, all that said, Hurst had just an average game. Even after I adjust it very healthily for the fact that he was playing Miller, he comes out to a C. 0.67 is his score per play. Up to 0.77 with the maximum possible adjustment for playing Miller is still a C at tackle. There's not a whole lot to say other than he did allow some pressure. He did allow some front check pressure. The other thing the tackles benefited from in this game was a lot of eligible receiver blocking. So they had a lot of chip blocking in particular. So I keep track of those. We had 16 set blocks. Those are eligible receivers held into block. And they had 14 chip blocks. And those are eligible receivers which make some attempt to block before they go out into the pattern. That's a very unusually high number of chip blockers relative to set. It's probably a slightly high number of total blockers assigned, but I've seen higher before. What is really unusual is that many chip blockers in a game. Now, most of those chip blockers were what I call hands chip blocks. So that they're mostly trying to either fan out a pass rush of five men or of four to make sure a lineman can take it over, or they're trying to set up a pass rush to pin it closer to Hurst, which was helping him a significant amount, in the same way Yanda would for Skura. But in any case, they're very helpful. Those hands chip blocks were still helpful to set up Hurst. What was even more helpful was some of the rib cracking action we've been seeing from Alex Collins the last 2 weeks, in terms of just absolutely breaking the ribs of guys that he chip blocks. So defensive ends, any lineman, I think, probably hates to be chip blocked because you usually have a 200, 225-pound running back slamming into your ribs. It hurts and, you know, takes their breath away and whatnot and makes them ineffective for the play, generally speaking. And Alex Lewis Alex Collins been very effective at doing that the last couple of weeks. And I had a citation here ready to go, and I don't have it in front of me right now. But if you look to the article, it's there, and hopefully you'll take a chance and take a look at that.
All right. That's great. So basically, the offensive line plays well, you win the game, is how it comes down to.
Yeah,
they play poorly, you're gonna have a much harder time winning. And this week they played well.
Everything really worked out. You know, obviously not the greatest conditions to pass, but the offensive line was good. The receivers were good. The scheme was, I thought, very good. And Joe was very good given the opportunity set that he had. So all the elements of making that passing game work, all 11 players contributed to it.
All right, so let's get to the offensive MVPs, and let's count down 3, 2, 1, and go back.
All right,
go
or you build, want me to go build first?
Go ahead.
Okay, so my number three is Mark Andrews, fearless in the middle of the field, made a play after the catch on both of his, so he had 30 and a 29-yard play. Boy, it is really nice to have a flex tight end that keeps the opposing defensive coordinator guessing in terms of package. So I'm very positive on him. He's my number three.
My number three is Justin Tucker. When you look around the league and so many guys are missing field goals, it's nice to have a guy that we can count on and trust him, even in the rain, to make these kicks look easy.
Yeah, great point. So it really took an illegal play for them to deny a kick from him. He's made 19 consecutive kicks now between 50 and 57 yards. That is just an amazing thing. The only, you know, they talk about sometimes he misses over 50. Well, that's not really where he misses. He misses 58 and up. That's where he starts missing.
Right.
And you know, there's no one else kicking very often from those kind of distances. So anyway, terrific career so far for him. Ronnie Stanley is my number two. Obviously, heroic effort. I could argue that he was the best of the line, but I think he was the best relative to his circumstances. I'm sad to see now he showed up with some sort of a foot injury on the injury report. So we already knew he had a knee injury, this elbow injury, and now he didn't practice today, or he was limited because of a foot.
Right, and I just love how you said earlier, he took that brace off and didn't even miss a play, just threw it to the sideline and got right back in there. My number two is Sam Cook, because there were two really bad high snaps, and he somehow was able to pull that down with a wet ball and get it lined up for Tucker.
All right. Well, he did get blocked on the first punt of the game and set that score, but that was Bowser's fault. So we do know that, and he just whiffed on his block.
Oh, yeah. I also, all truth be told, I missed the first 5 minutes of the game, so I missed that play.
Okay. All right. My number one is Flacco. Terrific day. He is generaling the offense right now. I like what's going on. I wish they would do a little bit less Lamar Jackson, or a little bit more of just Lamar Jackson as a decoy, and let Joe continue to run the play.
And my number one is Marty Morningweg, because I love the creativity and the change up. I like the Lamar Jackson creativity going on the field. It hasn't worked yet, but I like the idea that he's thinking out of the box.
Well, there you go. It will work at some point. We're going to get excited about a play from Lamar Jackson at some point in the next three games.
I'm guessing Sunday. I'm guessing Sunday night. You generally pull everything out to get past the Steelers.
Good point.
So this has been my prediction. I think I said this after week one, that all the Lamar not really using Lamar is to let the Steelers sleep on Lamar.
Okay.
All right, let's get to the mailbag. And I want to focus the mailbag on one question this week. And this is, of the players who will be free agents at the end of the year, who do you want to be back, and who do you think will be back, and why?
Okay, so the easiest way to do this is just to go through these players one at a time on the roster and talk about them. And I may miss somebody, and if I do, please just follow up on Twitter, and I'll try and do the best I can. But among fourth-year players, Willie Snead is under contract for next year, so he's not a factor. Max Williams, I do not believe, will be back. The team has two young tight ends. I think it's more likely they draft a tight end than that they spend money at tight end. The other fourth-year tight end they have is Nick Boyle. I think it is more likely they would make an attempt to sign him, but he may also have value, more value in the market in general. He's got some suspensions behind him, which are the things that could hold him back. But, you know, he's a guy they could sign to a 1 or 2 year deal to continue on, provide blocking, and still provide a viable receiving threat as well. So of the two, I would say it's more likely they'll try and retain Boyle than Max Williams. If you go on to the next player, Buck Allen, I think they will probably try and replace in terms of a draft pick. You need to continually get younger at running back. I think it is generally a bad idea to keep a running back around on a multi-year deal. If they did keep Allen, I think it's more likely they keep him on a one-year deal, possibly a two-year deal, recognizes special teams value and some of the things in special capacities, how he works on the offense. But yards per touch just don't justify much, and I don't really believe there'll be a lot of value for him on the open market. So hopefully, you know, if he can be signed cheap, hey, there's a right price to keep him around. If he can't, then I think they'll try and get younger at the position.
Right.
So let's keep going here. They have probably the most important fourth-year player they have right now is Za'Darius Smith, who is just an ungodly pass rusher right now and making all kinds of plays. He's only got two sacks. He's got six quarterback hits. And he's got other plays, one a short gain that was a takedown, another one that was called a run on a quarterback keeper that was really a sack that should have been credited to him. So he's one of the NFL's most productive pass rushers so far this season. And I would really like to get him at the right price, but I'm afraid he's going to go at the very high end. Now, the good news is if Za'Darius Smith goes on anything close to 10 sacks, 8 sacks and a bunch of pressures and quarterback hits as he's likely to pile up, he's going to be a very valuable commodity out there on the market, and somebody's going to pay a lot of money, and the Ravens will probably get a third-round draft pick at least as compensatory value, or a fourth-round draft pick at least as compensatory value. So they'll get something. It'll be a shame if they can't re-sign him. You know, it's a shame to lose Pernell McPhee, but they didn't have the money at the time to re-sign him after the Super Bowl. Za'Darius, they have money available, so if they wanted to make him the focus of their free agent efforts, they could do it. But for a team that already has four outside linebackers sitting there, Tim Williams begging for more playing time, I think the only way they'd really do it is if they were sure that Terrell Suggs was going and that Za'Darius would be replacing him. So I don't anticipate that that's going to be the case, but we'll see how that goes. Got one more player we need to talk about. Well, actually, two more. John Brown will be a free agent at the end of the year. Fifth-year player, definitely a key part of the Ravens' offense, and they're going to need to find a deep threat. John Brown has bet on himself with a one-year contract, so he's not going to be cheap. But hopefully, he's a guy the Ravens could extend and find a price that's amenable to both parties. The last player I'll bring up, besides Mosley, who everybody knows we need to keep, is Brent Urban. Now, Urban is on a one-year deal also, not dissimilar to Brown, coming back off an injury year. He was a free agent coming into this year. The re-signing of him was, I thought, a terrific move by the Ravens, and he's played quite well, very quietly, quite well. And I think it'd be great if the Ravens could find a way to sign him to a long-term deal. There will be demand for him. He won't be a third or fourth round pick, but he could be a $5 million a year guy somewhere for 5 years coming out of this year if he continues to play as well and doesn't get hurt. So I think those are kind of the key players at this point. A whole bunch more are going to be free agents after the 2019 season, particularly on the defense. And there's some big names like Henry and Pierce and Judon that they're going to have to figure out what do they want to do with those guys a year from now. So can't spend the entire piggy bank after the 2018 season.
Right. And again, it's all focused on this season as far as there could be bigger changes if this season doesn't go well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if Flacco is released, there will be money, but it'll be kind of delayed for a year because they'll have to take – well, they can take an $8 million cap hit for each of 2 years, save his salary. I guess it really creates maybe about $10 million of free space for next year. But then you got $8 million in dead money for the next year. So they're going to have to figure out how they want to change it up. Suggs is coming to the end of his contract. Jimmy Smith may be released before the end of his contract, which will save $9 million against the cap. So they have a few moves they can make to create cap space. Eric Weddle also in the last year of his contract, so he could potentially be a release if they really needed the cap space. Not like they don't have any. Not like they won't have any flexibility after this year. But they just want to be careful with the dollars because they have a lot of free agents after 2019 as well.
Right. When Garoppolo went down on Sunday for the 49ers, there was lots of talk of all of a sudden, well, RG3, let's trade RG3. I don't think that makes any sense because Kyle Shanahan's there and he's already had the RG3 experience. But it did make me start to think about RG3. And every week he goes in and he's not active. As an older quarterback who's trying to reestablish himself as a backup, not active doesn't help him out at all.
No, I think he wants to be playing somewhere above wanting to be playing for the Ravens, and he is a very polished and diplomatic guy. And when he's been asked this question at the podium, he says, "I'm worried about playing this year for the Ravens." Yada yada yada, and that's the right attitude to take. It that's what Ravens fans obviously want to hear. In truth, though, I think he'd welcome a trade. I think if the 49ers were a team that was really interested in RG3, which I would agree with you. I don't think it makes a lot of sense necessarily. But if they were interested and there just weren't other alternatives around the league they thought they could afford, I think he'd welcome the trade, and I think the Ravens need to entertain it. It does not appear to me like Jackson is anywhere near ready. So it may be that they'll need another backup quarterback for next year as well and have to consider carrying three. But certainly for the rest of this year, if Flacco goes down, I think the season is lost anyway. So I don't think that having RG3 around, honestly, would be that much of a help.
Right. I agree as well. So, all right, Ken, thanks for going through the offense with me. It's good to look back at a win. I hope that we are looking back at a win when we come back on Monday to talk about the defense facing the Steelers. Tell me about Russell Street Report and your offensive line write-up that's up there.
Sure. So the one thing you can see, in addition to getting all the quarter and time references, if you just want to kind of go through some offensive line play and see what I'm talking about, you can do that with Game Pass. Also out there are the charts of grades by week. So if you were looking for trends and seeing how players are doing, a lot of people like those charts, and they're sitting out there as well. So a couple things to read. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's @FilmStudyRavens. I'm checking my Twitter all the time. I have my tweet deck up, and I'd love to hear from you. Great, get some great analyst conversation going when you do. So appreciate your questions and your comments, and happy to talk with you. Josh, tell us a little bit about Birdland Sports.
Birdland Sports is your home for a whole bunch of Ravens and Orioles podcasts. I think it's five different shows. So if you're figuring we do three shows a week, you've got a podcast for every day of the week if you go to birdlandsports.com. And check that out and follow us on Twitter at Birdland Sports, where you'll get notified every time there's a new episode of one of these shows. But, yeah, so you'll find us, Film Study, up there. You'll find Neutral Zone Infraction, Dade's View that had a new episode just come out, Section 336. And
how about anything by Michael Crawford? He's very good. Did you get him to do a podcast yet?
I don't think so. I'd love to have Michael Crawford.
Yeah, he's good. We need to talk to him about that. He'd be excellent.
Yeah, and I mean, hey, if you're interested in Baltimore sports, you're interested in doing your own podcast, or you already have a podcast, reach out to me, because the real goal of Birdland Sports is to help develop shows in Baltimore.
Yeah, I'll say this. You know, when I started this, it's the production element is the really intimidating factor. And Josh really helped me through that. I'm sure he'd help other people too, because basically you've helped every podcast locally get started, right, Josh?
Most of the sports ones, I have had at least conversations and recommended equipment, if not helped them out with studio setups or something.
All right. Well, fantastic. And Josh, good to see you. I guess we'll talk after the Pittsburgh game.
Yep. Enjoy your weekend.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
At Lowe's, we're your go-to for great gardening values every day. That's why we've lowered our price on select bagged mulch, now starting at just $2.88 a bag. Mulch helps prevent weeds and retains moisture, and when you put it down around trees, shrubs, and flower beds, you'll see how beautiful it makes your outdoor space, just in time to welcome back family and friends. Shop online and pick up in-store. Lowe's, home to the best part of summer. Selection and product availability vary by location. While supplies last, U.S. only, excludes Alaska and Hawaii.